Morant with a running start. Elevates. Ooh. Oh, it dunks. Oh, my goodness. Calvin. Tie game in overtime. Gasol will turn his heat. It's gone. It's all time. 17.
Conley now with three.
Count it.
A 15-point play for Memphis. And Blake Griffin gets into it on the floor with Randolph. Hard to tell if there are any punches being thrown under there, but Griffin took exception to something. The officials break it up quickly.
Griffin. See, he just locked his arm and then kind of pulled him over. Zach falls down, and then, you know what? A little elbow there.
Oh, he's digging the elbow.
Yeah, you know.
Welcome to Grits and Grinds, a Memphis Grizzlies podcast. My name is Keith Parrish, and I am joined right now by Rob Fisher, the TV host for pregame and postgame Grizzlies games. And you got a Grind City Media, do everything, man. Also hosting a ton of podcasts. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Although you told me I was supposed to call you Fish and I already messed it up.
It's quite all right. Either one works.
Are you enjoying your off season? You got to take a little break here?
Yeah, very much so. It was a long, stressful, condensed, crazy year. And, I always tell people when the season ends, it's almost like breaking up with a girlfriend. Not even breaking up, like getting dumped by a girlfriend. Because, you know, you live your days every day through a season and the grind and the travel and you're with another family really for 6 months. And then when it ends, it just ends so suddenly and your whole life changes. I mean, your daily routine is different the next day. So it's always hard to get over the end of a season, and it takes a good week to kind of let the depression kind of go away. But this year was different. When the season ended, it was almost like a big sigh of relief and a big weight lifted off your back. And I think we were all ready to kind of get into an off season and just kind of take a step back from what was such a bizarre year.
So I don't want to get the metaphor too off color, but was this an abusive relationship this year?
It was. Yes, it was. It was. I mean, it just, you know, things just kept smacking in the face, whether it was playing every other day, you know, another game after another game after another game, or, you know, not being in the arena when you're calling a game, or, you know, not having that the relationships with the players and the coaching staff that you've had in the past. And, you know, I mean, it was a relationship that you felt like you were fighting it the whole time. And then we lost a couple of members of our team that, you know, was really, really hard to do because you never really had a chance to grieve or even process the whole thing because it was just one thing after another. So, yeah, it was an abusive relationship that somehow we stayed in. but when it was over, it was a nice release and a nice relief. So,
yeah.
But I'll say this, you know, for how much it was nice for it to be over finally. Can't wait to get started again.
Yeah, I feel like my life experience, whenever something is like kind of terrible and, you know, or not like not extreme terrible, but I'm like, this is no fun at all. I normally have a self-awareness like this is going to make a good story in maybe 1 year. Like in 1 year, I'm going to be like, yeah, this will be fun to talk about. But
yeah, no doubt. I mean, what an experience. You know, I mean, to do going back to last August, you know, to do games that were played in a bubble, to do them from an empty FedEx Forum was just so weird. And then to do it this entire season, you know, I mean, you know, people will always ask, you know, how hard was it to do games from an empty FedEx Forum when the game's being played, you know, across the country somewhere? And it was very difficult and it was hard to do the job. And it was hard to do the job the way that you want to do the job. And it was rough. And, you know, not being around the guys, not being around the staff, you know, that's where you build trust and that's where you build those relationships and why we've had such a great relationship with our broadcast crew with the team for so many years. And to not have that made it really difficult. But, you know, it was a matter of you just kind of held your head high and just did the job and hope the next year's back to some sort of normal. And I think that's what we're all hoping for.
So how many of these seasons/girlfriends has it been for you with the Grizzlies? I was trying to look it up and remember, like, how long have you been doing this with the Grizzlies?
15 years. My first year was Mark Ivoroni when he got hired and Mike Conley was drafted. So I came in with Mike and Mark and Zeebo and Tony and those guys and Mark Ivoroni. And he was my first experience as a coach. So had a lot of coaches and seen a lot of players and seen some players that stayed for a long time and been able to, you know, to go through their careers was something special for sure.
Are there any like unsung players from those early years that you feel like you really appreciated and maybe Grizzlies fans have kind of forgotten about them or you wish people talked about them more either now or at the time?
One guy that comes to mind right away, and I have his jersey, is Leon Poe.
Oh, yeah.
And he was such a short timer, too.
Yeah.
But the guy just came out and just produced and did his job every night. And he was such a good guy that he was one of my favorites for a guy who, you know, didn't really have a big role with the team. He was one of my favorite players throughout the years.
That's a good one. Are there any like young guys that you thought would be really good or like you latched onto and then it turned out that they wouldn't be good? Like who are some of those guys for you?
Alexander Johnson.
That's mine. That's incredible.
I loved Alexander Johnson.
I thought he was going to be awesome even after he started playing. Like he played in games and I'm like, oh, this guy's awesome. He's going to be around forever.
I thought he was going to be great. And I had a really good friend that was working for the team at the time who told me, you know, he had seen all the film and he had been in those meetings and he was like, this guy, he's just an animal. He's a beast. And I was like, I love him and I love his size. And he looks so tough and he's going to be great. And just never, never was anything. But I enjoyed him. A dude that I really liked as a person, but never really did anything for the team was Marko Jaric.
He was
a fun guy to hang out with and a really
OJ Mayo good, trade.
Really good dude. Yeah. And he was fun. I enjoyed Marko and his time here too.
I can't believe you said Alexander Johnson. I went to Florida State. So like I already was like aware of Alexander Johnson. And there's some guys who like when Jarnell Stokes was drafted, I was like, oh, this will be great for the Grizzlies. And then he played like 2 minutes and I was like, oh, he's too tiny and too slow. Like it was like immediate. Right. Alexander Johnson in the games. I have to go back and figure out what happened. Cause like, it seemed like he was good. It seemed like when he played, he was good and they just never played him. Oh man.
I'm glad there's someone else out there who knows Alexander Johnson and remembers Alexander Johnson as a Grizzly.
I mean, my first one, and I'm sure my memory is totally wrong. This would be before your time working for the Grizzlies. I think their first season they had Antonis Fotsis, who was a Greek player. And I don't know if I just saw the right garbage time where he came in, but like I saw him play. I want to say he made a couple behind the back passes. He knocked down some corner threes. And I was like, this is our best player. Why doesn't he ever play? But he never had an NBA career. So I guess I was,
it's amazing though, how many jerseys of his you see.
Oh yeah. Well,
I mean, I guess the Grizzlies just didn't have a lot of jerseys at that time.
That's amazing. I mean, I would pay a lot of money. I don't know if anyone out there has a line on tracking down a Fotsis jersey for me. He was an unlockable character in a recent NBA Jam for like one of the Greek professional teams. I can't remember if it was like Panathinaikos or something. And I got so excited. Like I got on. There's no way anyone else in Tennessee was that excited when they unlocked Antonis Fotsis. Looking at this current team, I know one of the many podcasts you host the Odds Couple on Grind City Media. I was seeing the odds that just came out for the MVP for next season.
Mm-hmm.
Ja Morant +4,500. I was racking my brain. Would you think those are probably the best odds any Grizzlies player has ever had in a preseason?
Wow. Yeah, the only person I could think of at the time, maybe after being an all-star and defensive player of the year, maybe Marc Gasol, maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe not even that. I mean, prop may have been like +5,000 or 5,500.
Yeah, even more.
Maybe Powell early in his career, but you know, there was no hope for the Grizzlies then. So it's tough to say this guy's an MVP candidate when you look at a team that's going to be in the lottery.
Right.
So yeah, I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that had better odds at this point going into a season than what we see in Ja right now.
I was thinking also maybe like would Zeebo after that first playoff run, you know, where they upset the Spurs in the first round and like Zach is putting up all this huge numbers. I was wondering like, did anyone, I can't even remember the expectations though. I can't remember what were expectations coming into that next year. Did people think the Grizzlies were going to be like a top four, top five seed or something. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I would imagine this is probably the best odds that a Grizzly has had, you know, in an off season going into a following season. And it just shows. I mean, it shows what the people believe in John Morant, and it shows the flashiness that he has and what he proved in the playoffs. And I think people certainly have taken notice. And you know, Vegas doesn't just throw names out there. I mean, obviously there are some people who think John Morant could be the MVP next year, or he wouldn't be on that list. So yeah, it's pretty exciting because just, you know, seeing the jersey sales numbers of this week with John Morant being in the top 15 from the second half of last year, and now John Morant's name being mentioned in MVP odds, even though they're long odds, just being mentioned in that certainly just shows what a great talent that we have here in Memphis for sure.
Yeah, and it also reflects just his popularity. And I think he's probably already, you know, the most popular Grizzlies player in franchise history as far as from a national landscape. I'm curious, as someone who's been around the team for a long time, at what moment did you realize that Ja Morant was like either going to be one, the most popular player the Grizzlies have ever had, or two, like, this is going to be the most special, like the biggest star that the franchise has ever had?
Well, everything that had been talked to me about Ja, when he was drafted, you felt like you got something special, but you really, you know, you don't know. And he's coming out of Murray State, and that certainly, you know, gets in your brain a little bit of, okay, well, how good can this guy be? Look at his size. How good can he be? Is he going to be some special elite talent? And it was one of the first preseason games that Ja played, and I was sitting with an agent, and not Ja's agent, but an agent who I was just talking with, and we were talking about certain players, and I asked him about Ja. And he looked at me and just kind of shook his head and said, this guy is going to be unlike anything you've ever seen. He said, there are good players, and then there are great players, but there are special players. He said, Ja Morant's special. And he said, and I knew it the first time I saw him play. First 5 minutes I saw him play, I knew he saw the court differently. I knew that his reaction time was different. Just everything it takes to have the greatness he saw in Ja Morant. And I respect this guy immensely. And when he told me that, I was like, okay. So I start telling everybody, this guy's going to be special. This guy's going to be special. And then you just start seeing it in the preseason games, and you saw it in the regular season games. And, you know, now after 2 years, every night he takes the floor, he does something special, something spectacular. And, you know, we've had great players in Memphis. Mike, just look at the core four guys whose numbers are going to go in the rafters. But we've never had a superstar. And, you know, there are only a handful of guys in the league that are that elite superstar. And I think John Morant's got potential to be one of those guys. He's already, I think, the most special talent that we've seen ever as a Memphis Grizzly. And that's saying something, considering, you know, the long careers that we had of that core four, and a guy like Jason Williams, who was so flashy and so dynamic, and Pau Gasol early in his career. So we've had really good players, but I don't think we've ever seen anything like this. And it was that conversation that kind of made me believe, okay, this guy is going to be different. And every night he makes me believe that even more.
Yeah, I'm similar as far as that first preseason. Like, it was like, yeah. I want to say it was a Hornets. I'm pretty sure it was a Hornets. They're playing the Hornets in the preseason. And Ja did like five things I'd never seen, not just a Grizzly, like basically any player do. I'm like, I think he just went between Cody Zeller's legs because he could. And he made a layup. And like, I don't ever know anything about draft prospects. Like, I'm wrestling with that right now, right? I don't watch college basketball. And I saw Ja Morant in person a couple times over that summer, and I was like, this guy is so small. Like, I was like, he's shorter than I am. He's skinnier than I, he feels like he's like 6'1", 150. I'm sure he weighs more than that, but he seems so tiny. And I was nervous, and maybe I'd been scarred from past first round picks, even if they weren't drafted that high. I'm like, at least Wade Baldwin looked like an athlete and like whatever, you know? And so I was nervous. And he's like, he's not playing in summer league, 'cause like he was a little banged up. And I'm like, oh, did they draft a hurt guy again? You know? So like, I felt like I had all this baggage, and then it was this preseason game where it's like, he just had five highlights that are five of the best highlights in Grizzlies franchise history. Like we've never had, we had that one year where the top 10 plays of the year, it was eight of them were James Johnson who played like 30 games. And it was like, we've never had a guy who could catch alley-oops. It's like we ran alley-oops for Jared Bayless and he would catch like five a year. And it's like, we never had a guy who do these things like Strosho. Okay. But like, he wasn't good. And so seeing him in that first preseason game where it's like, he was making NBA guys, legitimate NBA guys look silly. And he was getting to the bucket where I was like, even if this guy isn't like an all-star, he has the flair and he's going to be popular and he's going to be huge.
I'm like you. I've never kind of gave up trying to, you know, evaluate draftees after Adam Morrison. I was done. I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And even Steph Curry, I was like, you know, too small, fragile, blah, blah, blah. He's not going to make it in the, okay, I'm done. I'm done trying to evaluate players. My evaluation of John Morant, just in the limited time that I saw him, and would talk to Brevin Knight about it. And I was like, this sounds really weird. Cause I was embarrassed to tell anybody else. I was like, but he dribbles the ball behind his back and between his legs more than anyone I've ever seen. And so effortless of more than anyone I've ever seen. And I was like, and that's kind of strange, but his handles were just incredible. And then when he gets to the NBA and he starts doing it, I mean, it's just part of his routine where he'll dribble it behind his back or even fake behind his back, or he'll dribble it between his legs, like going backwards. I mean, his handles are incredible. The way that he can go right-handed or left-handed is unbelievable. I mean, just he's such a treasure to watch. And, you know, it's a guy that I look forward to watching every single night, and a guy that I know every single night is going to give me something I haven't seen before. And he's delivered.
So you have John Morant, obviously, you know, who is now this big star we've been talking about for the Grizzlies. And I think it projects, you know, he's likely, or there's a good chance he makes the All-Star team next year. But what else are you thinking that this team now needs? Now they've been ahead of schedule, is what everyone says, the last couple seasons. Maybe they outperformed preseason expectations, at least external preseason expectations. In your opinion, like now this offseason, what should they do? Like, are they going to keep just kind of things intact and take it easy and figure out what they have maybe as the season goes along? Or what should they be doing now, do you think?
Well, I think they're in a good position because I think worst case scenario, you run it back. And if you run it back, you know, you're getting a Jaren Jackson Jr. I mean, that you're almost adding as a free agent. And to me, there shouldn't be any questions of Jaren Jackson Jr. I think the limited time that we saw him last year, just throw that out. I mean, if your thought was going into last season that this team is going to be built around John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. and they're the cornerstones of your franchise of the future, I think that should still be your belief today. I don't think anything we saw from Jaren should change your mind. So if you run it back, you're getting a healthy Jaren Jackson Jr. That's number one. The figuring out of Justice Winslow and what he's going to be and what his role is going to be. And they need to find that and figure it out, because it obviously didn't work in the amount of time that we saw him. It just didn't. Hopefully an off season and a training camp, you can kind of figure out his role with the team. So I think if you run it back, you're okay. And I think there's just natural progression. There will be progression in Ja's game, progression in Jaren's game, progression and hopefully Grayson and DeAnthony and your young guys and Desmond Bane and Xavier Tillman. And you're going to have the second year, improvement. Brandon Clark, you'd like to see him build on more on that first year than what we saw in year two. So I think worst case scenario is not bad. But I trust in the front office. I trust what they've done in the last few off seasons to improve the team. I don't think it's anything drastic. I don't think you go all in. I don't think you do like what the Atlanta Hawks did last year, where it's let's go all in and get some pieces that can play and make a run. I don't think that's the Grizzlies' idea. I don't think it should be the Grizzlies' idea. But it's just tinkering with the lineup. You're not going to find Chris Paul, but maybe somewhere between Chris Paul and Jay Crowder. You know, okay. Who's that guy? Who's that guy? Yeah. That veteran guy that can come in, who's had playoff experience, who's had game experience, who can be a voice for you, who can be a leader. I think this team, you know, to Ja's credit, when they traded Jay Crowder and traded Solomon Hill, who were both great for the franchise, they were great in being veteran leaders for a young team. But when they traded them, it was kind of handed over to Ja. And I was okay with that because Ja, even with Jay and Solomon, was kind of the vocal leader, even at a young age. And I think Ja will continue to develop as a leader and develop as the guy who is the voice of the guys on the floor. But I think if you just had another veteran, a guy who's been through the rigors of the postseason, a guy who's been through the middle of a game on the bad end of a 20-2 run, a guy who can calm the team down, just that sort of influence, you know, like you had with Jay Crowder, a guy like that, I think is something that could go a long way with the Grizzlies. But you add draft picks, maybe tinker the lineup with a couple of things, figure out what you're doing on the wing position. You got too many guys. I mean, somebody's got to go. And whether that's in a trade or to bring back that, maybe that sort of player that I'm looking for, I just kind of sort out, you know, who's in the rotation between Justice and Grayson and DeAnthony and, Desmond Bain, you know, those guys, who's going to get the minutes, who's going to get those minutes. So you figure that out. I think you tinker with the lineup, but to me, that's all you do. And I think you continue to grow and develop as a team. And, you know, then maybe next off season, you kind of have it figured out of, okay, what exactly is it to get us that next step or to get us over the hump? And I think that's kind of the time frame of things now.
I tend to agree with that maybe there are too many questions still where you're like, let's still figure out more. The idea of adding another veteran or like a guy with a lot of NBA experience who can kind of be a leader in that locker room, it's really interesting because I almost wonder, and maybe you can't answer because you haven't been able to travel with the team like or be closer to the team and the players as you normally would. I wonder about this, the chemistry of this locker room and just how unique it is, just how, one, how young everyone is, and two, the continuity, which you don't normally see in the NBA, like where you don't normally see the exact same roster. It was essentially the exact same roster after the trade deadline of 2020 until now. And then there's a good chance it'll be the same roster going into next season. And that's really unique in the NBA. And I wonder, maybe are there drawbacks to that no one ever envisioned? Like, do they need to get used to the turnover that is more custom in the NBA life? And do they need to have like a voice of like a 10-year veteran? Because even the coaching staff with Taylor Jenkins, who's a guy who doesn't have an NBA background, like, I wonder if like just adding another voice, a player like you mentioned, would be something really, really beneficial and would help this team make that next step.
Yeah, I think it would. I are there drawbacks? I think there are more positives than drawbacks. Continuity is just so important, I think, in the NBA. Phoenix has run it back for so many years with this young team and they weren't able to do anything. They had a couple of big pieces and boom, now they're in the NBA finals. I think with the San Antonio Spurs, I mean, they're the ideal organization that you look through the years and the continuity that they had from coaching staff to players, it was so beneficial for them. So I like the continuity. I think continuity is good. I think it's got more positive factors than it would have in drawbacks. But at some point, you know, you get to a point where you've reached your peak and you can't go any further. So you need that next voice or that next guy that can be a ball handler or the next guy that could be a shooter or whatever. You have to tinker with it. You have to try to make steady improvement going forward. I don't think they need to make a leap going forward, but I think steady improvement going forward is kind of where they're at right now. I think a lot of the credit for the success, and as you mentioned earlier, being ahead of schedule, I guess, in these 2 years under Taylor Jenkins, he deserves a lot of the credit. You know, I mentioned my first year with Mark Ivoroni, and I'll never forget it. It was just a month into the season, and I came over to Sean Tuohy and Pete at the time, and I asked both of them, I was like, is this how it always is? I mean, the players just, they're not listening to them. They're kind of shooing them off, and there's just no connection between the players and the coach. And, well, all right, a year later, Mark Ivoroni's gone.
Yeah.
The trust that these guys have in Taylor Jenkins and the trust that Taylor Jenkins shows to them, I think goes a long way in this team having, you know, not a lack of leadership. I just think there could be more. Because it's a great dynamic. The coach has the players' trust. The players have the coach's trust. And when you have that, that's half the battle. And it's more than half the battle, I think, to be a successful coach in the NBA. And, you know, when the team and not being around them, yeah, it was hard this year. But the thing that I always recognized, the players after the game, how much they sounded like Taylor Jenkins.
Oh,
when the players start sounding like the head coach, the coach has the players bought into what they're doing. And I think that's a situation the Grizzlies have. And to me, that's so important going forward, that there is no friction. It's a team that is tightly knit. It's a team that has close friendship relationships. And it's a team that has a coach that's built on relationships and talks about it, what he did under Coach Budenholzer and what he did under Coach Popovich and how important that is. And the relationships that he saw with Pop and Duncan and Bud and Giannis, that's kind of what he wants with himself and Ja and Jaren. And so far, I think he's built those brilliantly, and which will give him a road and a pathway to being a very successful coach. And, you know, and I think the team buys in. I think that is a huge sign for this team.
Yeah, that's a good summary and a good answer to all that. I think it's funny mentioning Ivoroni. I specifically remember, like, I don't know what the word is, just the body language, the exasperated body language of Mike Ivoroni. It's like burned in my brain. It's like, yes. It's like I'm not an X's and O's expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I remember that season being like, I don't think you're supposed to give up like 10 run out layups every game. Like, why right. is no one ever back? Like on the way, they lose 60 games that year, but it felt like it was constant. We would miss, and then it would be an uncontested layup on the other end. And I'm like, this is not going.
It was in that exasperated look. I mean, my mental picture of Mark Ivoroni is something you should never do as a coach. There were a lot of times during timeouts, he'd sit down, he'd be wiping the whiteboard and he would just be shaking his head.
Yeah.
Taking deep breaths like, oh, you idiots. I mean, that was the look that came across, was he's looking at them like they're all idiots and he's the only one that knows basketball. And the players just looked at him like, tell us something. What do you want? And then he'd wait till the end of the timeout and he starts scribbling things and everybody'd be like, we don't even know what we're doing. And they'd go out on the floor and they wouldn't care. And it was brutal. And I was like, this isn't going to last long. I don't know. I've never been around NBA players and coaches and huddles before, but this doesn't seem right. And it was not right.
That's great. Well, let's wrap up. I'm going to steal a question from my other show, Fast Break Breakfast. As a man who's been in Memphis sports for a long time, I'd like to know your opinion on what's the best breakfast spot in Memphis.
Man. Well, I mean, one of my answer that always comes to mind, because I go there a lot, is it, but it's not a good Memphis answer. So I'll give you two answers. Waffle House is still one of my favorites.
Yeah, sure. You're in the South. That's fine.
It's always it's amazing how they work the kitchen. The food is always good. I'll go to Waffle House any day for breakfast. But other than that, man, there are so many good ones. Probably another broken egg might be my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. I've been there. Yeah. So
that's one of my favorites. The bagel. Is it just the bagel? Is that what it's called? On that Kirby and Poplar, just found that place a little while ago and it was tremendous. Yeah, man, everywhere I go for breakfast in Memphis, it's always great. I love breakfast and I love my breakfast in Memphis for sure.
There you go. That's a good blanket statement to not offend anyone.
I wish I could think of the names even right now.
Oh, it's good.
I can't even think of them.
Don't worry about it. Well, hey, Fish, I appreciate your time. And everyone out there, make sure you check out the Night Court that you do with Brevin. That your last episode, hilarious. Very, very, very funny. So everyone can check that out. But I appreciate the time and hopefully you'll come on again sometime.
Absolutely. Anytime. Appreciate it.